Welcome to the CM Finance First Quarter Earnings Release Conference Call. Your speakers for today's call are Mike Mauer, Chris Jansen, and Rocco DelGuercio. A question and answer session will follow the presentation. I would now like to turn the call over to your speakers. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. With me today are Chris Jansen, my co-chief investment officer, and Rocco DelGuercio, our CFO. Before we begin, Rocco will give our customary disclaimer regarding information and forward-looking statements. Rocco?
Thanks, Mike. I would like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded and that this call is the property of CM Finance, Inc. Any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by visiting our investor relations page on our website at www.cmfn-inc.com. I'd also like to call your attention to the safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information and remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements and projections. We ask that you refer to our most recent 10-Q filing for important factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We will not update forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our investor relations page on our website. At this time, I'd like to return the call back to our chairman and CEO, Michael Mauer.
Thanks, Rocco. As in our past calls, I will begin with a discussion of what we've seen in the leveraged finance market. Chris will then review our investment activity during and after the quarter, and then Rocco will discuss our financial results. I will conclude with commentary on our outlook for the portfolio. We have redoubled our focus on developing directly sourced investments, usually on a club basis, over the last several months. Club deals frequently have a longer lead time between identifying the opportunity and closing on the investment, as well as a slower due diligence. The trade-off is that these opportunities are not tied to borrowing conditions in the syndicated markets. Terms are idiosyncratic, with structures thoughtfully matched to the risk profile of the borrower. It's an opportunity to do more work in exchange for better returns and protections for us as lenders. During the quarter, we made two direct investments and closed on another direct investment after quarter end. We still look at loans that are broadly syndicated as well as secondary opportunities in loans and bonds. However, lending conditions in the syndicated markets remain borrower-friendly. 73% of new loans tracked by LCD year-to-date are covenant-lite. We pride ourselves on our attention to the documentation and structuring of our investments, which has led us to pass on a significant number of new deals. Through our strategic relationships with Stifel and Cyrus and our proprietary networks of our investment team, we can leverage our origination capacity and call on a deep base of knowledge from the industry and product specialists as well as investment bankers. As is true when we spoke last, our pipeline is focused largely on direct lending opportunities. We are always focused on secured lending to high-quality management teams and companies. We are opportunistic about the opportunities in our current pipeline as we finish 2017 and enter the new year. I'd now like to turn the call over to Chris to discuss our portfolio activity.
Thanks, Mike. We made three investments during the quarter, each of which is a new portfolio company. We also had three realizations during the quarter. As I mentioned on our last call, we made an investment in the first lien loan to Career Builder. This loan backed Apollo's purchase of the company, which is a leading online employment website on the internet, serving both employers and job seekers. Our yield at cost was 9.1%. We invested in a first lien loan to Liberty Oilfield Services, a provider of hydraulic fracturing services. Riverstone is the sponsor. This is a club deal and refinanced Liberty's existing capital structure. Our yield at cost was 9.8%. Finally, we led a new second lien loan to Montrose Environmental Group. Montrose is a privately held environmental services firm that provides air, soil, and water testing and related environmental services nationwide. Our yield to cost was 15%. During the prior quarter, we participated in a first lien loan from Melissa and Doug, the maker of a wide variety of children's toys. Our position was small, and we sold it early this past quarter, realizing a gain of 1.5 points. This extremely high IRR is not meaningful given our short holding period. We also fully realized our investment in the first lien term loan of YRC Worldwide, a less-than-truckload freight carrier, which we had held since the IPO of CM Finance in February of 2014. Our realized IRR was approximately 8.6%. We received repayment in full on our second lien loan to TNS, which we had also held since the IPO. Our realized IRR was approximately 9.6%. Our portfolio company count has held steady since June 30, with 23 portfolio companies. The count remains at 23 today. As of September 30th, our largest industry concentration was business services at 22% of the portfolio at fair value. Oil and gas services represented 19.7% of our portfolio, split between 11.3% oilfield services and 8.4% E&P. Entertainment and leisure followed at 14.1%, followed by healthcare at 8.9% and media at 6.3%. Since quarter end, we made one new investment and had one full realization. Zinc oxide produces a key raw material used in tire manufacturing, as well as chemical, agricultural, and personal care applications. We participated in the first lien club deal and also co-invested in the equity. We purchased $7.5 million of this loan, which is priced at LIBOR plus 1,000 at a purchase price of $99. We also purchased approximately $523,000 of equity alongside our lending partner in the transaction. Redbox repaid its loan in full in October. This loan was structured to repay quickly, so we were not directly surprised to receive this prepayment. Our fully realized IRR was approximately 13.5%. I'd now like to turn the call over to Rocco to discuss our financial results.
Thanks, Chris. For the quarter, our net investment income was $3 million or 22 cents per share. As of September 30th, the fair value of our portfolio was $271.9 million compared to $254.9 million at June 30th. Our investment activity accounts for a $6.3 million increase in our portfolio. We also had $700,000 increase in our net changes in our marks. As of September 30th, the weighted average yield of our debt portfolio, including amortized costs, was 10.67% versus 9.73% at June 30th. Two major factors contributed to the increase in our average yield. First, our investments during the quarter had an average yield of 11.7% versus 9.1% average yield on investments realized in the quarter. This accounted for a 55 basis point increase in our yield. Second, the restructuring of Bird Electric removed a significant non-accrual asset from our debt portfolio as we equitized the loan. This accounted for a 39 basis point increase in our yield. As of October 1st, we removed Bird from non-accrual status, leaving us with no assets on non-accrual currently. Our debt portfolio was comprised of 96% floating rate investments and 4% fixed rate investments. Both 1 and 3 month LIBOR are in excess of all applicable rate floors of our loans. Our average portfolio company investment was approximately $11.8 million. Our largest portfolio company investment, PGI, was $25.8 million, and our second largest portfolio company, Kalis was $22.9 million. As of September 30th, 51% of our portfolio was in first lien investments, 44.6% of our portfolio was in second lien investments, and the remaining 4.4% was in equity and warrant positions. We did not hold any unsecured debt investments as of September 30th. Additional information regarding the composition of our portfolio is included in our Form 10-Q filed yesterday. We were 0.7 times levered as of September 30th, compared to 0.6 times levered as of June 30th. With respect to our liquidity, as of September 30th, we had $14.5 million in cash, $16.1 million in restricted cash, and $22.27 million of capacity under our revolving credit facility with Citi. With that, I'd like to turn the call back over to Mike.
Thank you, Rocco. The movement in our marks this quarter were on balance positive with a few large movers. Three marks changed more than $1 million. These were Endemol, U.S. Well Services, and Trident. Our mark on Endemol improved from 77 to 86 this quarter. Endemol's results were encouraging, and the company has an improving organic growth profile coupled with margin expansion, which reduced its financial leverage. Our mark on U.S. Well Services Class A and Class D units improved an aggregate of $3.3 million. U.S. Well's results have improved materially since the restructuring, including better volumes and stabilized margins. We own equity by virtue of that restructuring, and we're pleased with the financial performance of the company over the past several quarters. We decreased our mark on Trident Health from 78 to 58. Weakness in Trident's customer base as well as a challenging debt profile give us reason for concern. We continue to monitor the credit closely and expect to work constructively with stakeholders over the coming months. Our portfolio yield improved significantly this quarter. As Rocco explained, the combination of our new investments in the quarter, our realizations of lower yielding assets, and the successful restructuring of Bird Electric all played a role. Our focus on direct lending relationships led to both significantly more attractive yield opportunities with Montrose and Liberty, and also to better structural protections than are available in a typical syndicated transaction. Over the long term, we believe structuring is essential for the preservation of capital. We're committed to paying a sustainable dividend to our shareholders. Although we under-earned our dividend in the second quarter, we expect to earn in excess of our dividend during the December quarter, and we are on track to cover the dividend for both the fourth quarter and the full calendar year 2017. Our run rate portfolio yield, as well as our current portfolio size, give us confidence as we look into 2018. We continue to be sensitive to the ebbs and flows related to repayments and reinvesting of capital with the appropriate return and protections for our capital. Our investment activity grew our portfolio by $16.3 million. However, interest income declined by $465,000 between June quarter and September quarter. The timing of our investments in Liberty and Montrose were a key factor in this seeming disconnect. Both closed late in September. We also entered the quarter under-levered at 0.6 times, which is below our target plus or minus 0.75 times, that 0.75 being our actual leverage at September quarter end. We are comfortable at our current leverage level, and we strive to keep our leverage between 0.65 and 0.85 times. We did not earn any incentive fee in the September quarter, due largely to the timing of our investments and repayments, although we do expect to earn our incentive fee in the current quarter. Our board of directors declared a distribution for the quarter ended December 31, 2017 of 25 cents per share, which will be payable on January 4th, 2018 to shareholders of record as of December 15th. We believe our dividend level is consistent with our ability to generate NII without reducing our investment quality or changing our focus from secured lending opportunities. We believe in active management of our portfolio and have continued our work in lowering the portfolio risk profile while maintaining net investment income in order to sustain our dividend. As opportunities permit, we have exited lower yielding loans in favor of direct investments with better yields and structures. We believe we have additional room to rotate the current portfolio out of lower yielding, more liquid assets in favor of direct investments in the future. In a market that was generally unforgiving for lenders, we have identified and closed two deals that had significant positive impact on our portfolio yield and were also more conservative structures than we see in syndicated loans. Over the past year, we have decreased our average position size, increased our number of portfolio company investments, and have reduced our non-accruals. The team underwrites conservatively, focusing on quality management teams, sustainable capital structures, security packages, and financial covenants for the protection and preservation of value over the long term. We focus on preserving capital, but also think additional upside NAV potential remains in our current portfolio, especially in our energy book. Operator, could you please open the line for Q&A?
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will conduct the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone now, and you will be placed in the queue in the order received, or press pound at any time to remove yourself from the queue. Please listen for your name to be announced and be prepared to ask your question when prompted. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone now. Our first question comes from Ryan Lynch from KBW. Please go ahead, Ryan.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. The first one, your portfolio, the weighted average yield on new investments this quarter is obviously, you know, very high in a very competitive environment. I believe that was driven by your investment in Montrose Environmental. I believe you said they had like a 15% yield on that investment, if I heard you correct. So can you just talk about how you're able to get, definitely above average yield in a very competitive environment, and what you guys saw in Montrose that can ensure investors that you're not stretching for yield and potentially, at the result of taking on, you know, excess credit risk?
Yeah, Ryan, I appreciate the question and an opportunity to focus on that. As you and all the others know, we have a long-term strategic relationship with Stifel. This came in through Stifel's investment bank. It's a client that was focused on trying to get a financing done in short order. Total size of the financing is approximately $40 million. They have a first lien group there. They wanted to get it done quickly. They have a company that we believe total firm value is a minimum of 8 to 10 times their EBITDA. Our lending allows them to take it up to about 4.25 times. So approximately 50% loan to value. They wanted to get it done because they are very active in rolling up small companies into their base. And so therefore, for the loan that we gave them, they were very happy to have a lender who could structure something to their needs over the near term. And paying, I think, a couple hundred basis points, you know, you could argue that we're 200 or 300 higher than others, was an appropriate premium for them given the time frame and everything they wanted to do. But that's the background.
Okay, that's helpful. And this is maybe just a technical question, but, you know, when I look at that investment in your 10Q, I know you mentioned on the call you said that's a 15% type of yielding investment. When I look in the 10Q, it shows that it's L plus 950. What is the disconnect between the 50% versus what it shows up as L plus 950 in the 10Q?
Yeah, there's three pieces to it, and we can follow up with more detail. But there's the discount that we got it, the L plus the spread, and then there's call protection on the backside depending on when it comes out. And so the yield to worst comes out at 15% and could be actually higher in certain circumstances.
Okay.
And the interest and rate then, does also step up in the out years.
Okay.
Okay.
And then a similar question with Liberty Oil Field. You guys obviously, prior to this quarter, had a very large, oil and gas portfolio. So, oil and gas, oil with oil prices recovering, that's, an industry that's maybe less concerning, but there's still, substantial concerns around that industry. So can you just talk about, what you saw in Liberty Oil Field that you guys felt compelled to further grow your oil and gas portfolio, which is already substantially large before this investment?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time thinking about the industry bucket here. And I would say that I think that we are, at the very top end of what we want to have in that overall bucket after putting Liberty in. Liberty is a fairly unique opportunity because, in our view, with Riverstone, you have the preeminent private equity energy sponsor who has a significant equity check in. And what was unique on top of that, and you can say that about a lot of sponsors, is that when we looked at the first lien opportunity, they were benefiting from the uptick as everyone else did, but had a higher operating leverage, meaning that they were benefiting from cash flow significantly as you saw oil and gas trade up. And secondly, the asset coverage here, and this is critical as we think about energy, okay, whether or not it's EMP or this company, that if you're going to have some leverage on it, and this has 3 to 4 turns of leverage, that you have really good asset coverage. And our sensitivities say that you're covered well in excess of 1x. There are others that were, working on the deal with us. It's a small club group. I think it's a total of 4 people. Including us in this deal, that argue they were 3x plus covered. But, 1 to 3 turns. And, Chris, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Yeah, the other thing, Ryan, is that we had a very good window through our investment in U.S. Well on the industry turn in the fracturing and the fracking business. On top of that, part of that operating leverage for Liberty was much broader diversity in both customer and also in basin as well. And their fleets are extremely highly utilized as we entered into this loan. So you could see the numbers.
Okay, that's helpful. And then one last one. You mentioned that you guys expect to fully earn the dividend in the calendar fourth quarter. You guys, obviously, the revenues were light in the calendar third quarter, even though you guys had substantial portfolio growth, and I think you said that was due to the timing of closings versus repayments. So I just want to make sure I'm clear. Do you guys assuming that the portfolio remains flat from the end of the calendar third quarter, you guys expect that the incremental revenues from those investments closed later in the calendar third quarter, you guys will be able to fully earn the dividend in the calendar fourth quarter?
Yeah, 2 things. One is, assuming the portfolio we have today, we expect to fully cover plus earn our incentive fee. There is one transaction that we expect, no guarantees, but we expect to close in the next 10 days, and that will further increase the over-earning of the dividend. But we do not need that in order to fully earn this quarter, next year, next quarter, our dividend.
Okay. That's all for me. Thank you for taking my questions.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Robert Dodd from Raymond James. Please go ahead, Robert.
Hi, guys. Following up on Ryan's question on Montrose, the 15% versus what's on the schedule. So accounting-wise, obviously, are we going to see it come in an interest income as the L plus 9.5 plus the OID, which is, $400,000 over 3 years? Or is there going to be some accretion of this kind of the yield to worst that you described, that almost no matter how it plays out, It's going to produce a materially higher yield than what shows up on the schedule. So can you just give us a look on how is that actually going to work out in the accounting, or is that yield to worst going to manifest in a lump sum income whenever that event happens?
So there will be two pieces to it. One is the LIBOR plus and the accretion over the next approximately 24 months. At the end of 24 months, subsequent to that, there is an increasing rate, so you would start to see that in current income if it is not repaid. If it is repaid, then you'll see an acceleration of a slight lump sum that gets you to that yield to worse or better.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Then on the Liberty question, I mean, as you said, you're kind of at the peak of what you'd want oil and gas-wise. And I understand that there's a tough decision about where you cap any individual industry. Were you just looking at the where the cap should be based on what you trying to word this the right way? What you think, just industry and sector specific, or did you take into account the fact that, you know, frankly, some of your energy investments have not been the greatest performers, and reduce what you felt a cap would be by some amount above that? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I understand the point. We always take into account, if you would, you're saying some of the markdowns of our existing portfolio, specifically like mm-hmm. AAR. We do take that into account. We don't ignore that. But I'd say that there were probably four or five things that we took into consideration. When you think about it, it is not as straightforward as saying, here's an industry, I've got, you know, OEM auto, secondary parts manufacturing that is to the OEM industry. There is gas exposure, there's oil exposure, there's E&P with hard assets in the ground that you leverage off advance rates on that. There's oil field services where you've got hard equipment and you're secured by that. There's oil field services where you're basically first lien but asset light and you're a lot lower leverage at the outset there. And then there's the question of what basins are they across. And when we looked at Liberty and we saw, you know, Permian Basin, DJ Basin, Marcellus, the best basins, Eagleford, that's another overlay. And then lastly, and not insignificant here, and maybe I should have said this first, is when we look at that portfolio at, I'm going to aggregate it, the 19%, there's liquidity in that portfolio of at least 10%, close to 10% of the portfolio. I could argue more than 10%. There's two names that come to mind that we have ability to shift in and rotate out into other industries. We're not with 19% in illiquid direct lending two-person deals. So that liquidity gives us some ability to bring it down and redeploy too.
Okay, great. Got it. Thank you. On and also kind of following up on Ryan's question, in terms of earning the dividend or over-earning the dividend, if this other deal closes, when I look at what's your outlook, if you can, on any kind of on prepayments, when I look at, obviously, Redbox already prepaid, when I look at some of the other on the good side, right, like Premier Global, where fair value is above amortized cost, which sometimes happen when you think a prepayment might be imminent or something like that. I mean, do you have a feel about is prepayment activity, do you have expectations that that's going to be moderate and that's factored in, or what do you feel about that right now?
Yeah, Robert, great question. It's something we really look at, and quite frankly, you know, had a long career of doing this over the last 25 years, a little different market. We have had over the first three quarters over $100 million of our portfolio mostly turnover from prepayments. So when we look at the portfolio overall, you know, you figure out a PGI, with what the equity sponsor wants to do there in particular, we don't view that as having any refi risk at this point.
The other thing is PGI, remember, it's not where it trades vis-a-vis the cost, because our cost was low 90s on that. From a refi exposure standpoint, it's where does it trade vis-a-vis the price to take it out. So in order to take it out, they'd have to pay par. So when you're trading in a 99 to 101, 102, that's when all the alarm bells are going off and getting ready to get refied.
Okay,
and there are one or two of those. So, Chris, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, plus a lot of what we put on is fairly new when I go back and look over the last, you know, couple of quarters. You know, and some of that was the lower spread strategy that, you know, we did over the summer. And so that just adds to the liquidity that Mike spoke about earlier with regard to the oil and gas. It just is kind of portfolio-wide. We feel like we have a pretty liquid portfolio, so we have plenty of dry powder as, you know, new direct lending club types of opportunities come to pass.
But I think specifically, and I'm not going to give any names because I don't want to give any issuers any ideas, but we do have built into our assumption that, number one, there probably will be at least one that has some activity on it, but we also have, to the earlier question about investment levels and everything else, we already have a commitment that we are sure if that does happen, that this will be, that one will be reinvested and we will not be exposed to reinvestment on that name.
Got it. Thank you. Couple more, if I can. Bird Electric, obviously you equitized the position. Can you get a year? So that's $7.5 million is obviously not generating income. So can you, obviously it wasn't before because it was a non-accrual as well, right? But any color, what's your expectation, you know, such that you can comment about a timeline for maybe monetizing that $7.5 million or staying put and, you know, obviously potentially generating a gain on that? And obviously, you know, in that, if you stay in the equity rather than monetizing, obviously there's an opportunity cost of potential income if you exit and reinvest. But can you give us any thoughts on Bird?
Sure. So first of all, just to refresh everybody there, and Robert, I appreciate the question. I know you are up to speed on this. There are preferred units that do have a distribution, and right now it's PIC, 10% per annum associated with them. There is a target performance that will trigger at some point, and that will be required to go cash pay. We expect that will happen in the next 6 to 12 months. They will go cash pay, and they will continue to be cash pay from there on, and also have a separate component that gives us upside equity participation on the company. So to your point about cash drag, we would expect that to end in the next 6 to 12 months and be a reasonable return on that and continue to give us upside on the equity. And as Rocco mentioned earlier, we've taken that off non-accrual as of October 1.
Got it. And then flipping to the other side of the balance sheet, if I can, on the liability side, we're about to hit, I guess, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of not that it matters that much, of the Citi facility, the $50 million. I mean, combination of between the relatively high spread, what I describe as fairly onerous non-use fees, has there been any exploration of either renegotiating, renewing, or replacing that facility?
I think it's fair to say that we have been having conversations, and I think they've been very constructive conversations. And hopefully in the near term, we'll put an 8K out to you and tell you what's going on there.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Allison Taylor-Rodari from Oppenheimer. Please go ahead, Allison.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. So a lot of my questions so far have been asked and answered, and I really appreciate all the color on some of the names. But I wanted to follow up on one of the earlier questions that was asked and answered by you, and then a little bit about your comment on Redbox being a short-term, a reasonably short-term play. So you said that Montrose has some call protection on the outside. Now, does that imply that, you know, you can't be called out of the deal for a few years, or that if you were to be called out of the deal, out of it, it would carry a nice hefty premium? And then second to that, do you have other names in your portfolio that might be backed by sort of, you know, prominent sponsors that may also be kind of medium deals, kind of, and, you know, ones that you might kind of expect to be prepaid on a short-term basis?
Chris, do you want
to? Yeah, first to go through in order, Redbox was a deal that was very low, carried very low leverage, big cash flow generator. Mm-hmm. The company had generated about 15 or 20% repayments just from excess cash flow. We bought it at 97. We did not think it would get refinanced so quickly, but it was taken out right after the call premium went out, off after the first year. So that lasted basically 1 year. And the high return is from this high, heavy level of amortization repayment that we got through excess cash flow and schedule against a $97 price. So that's the way Redbox was structured. It just got refinanced out, but we didn't anticipate it sticking around for that much longer anyway, maybe another year, year and a half on top.
And Montrose, not quite 97, has a 98 initial price, and then it does have a short period where they could take it out at par, assuming that it does not come out. We have premiums that will happen and escalators. So premiums happen and escalating in rate.
Yeah, and your third question, Allison, hopefully I'll answer it properly on repayments. They're really, you know, as you're looking through the portfolio again, there's nothing that we feel is imminent or close to imminent on any, you know, refinancing or repayment in our portfolio other than scheduled amortization.
Okay, great. That's really good color. And then one follow-up. I know you guys have a reasonably fixed rate kind of right side of your balance sheet, which is great given that most of your portfolio is floating rate. How sensitive are you guys to another 50 or 75 basis point Fed funds hike?
It is net positive to us, if that's the question. We haven't haven't disclosed kind of how positive because it really depends on the mix, I think. Rocco.
Yeah, so Allison, it's in the queue, but it, let's say there's a 1% increase, mm-hmm. that would increase our net income about 6.8%, and if there's a 2% increase, our net interest income would go out up about to 13.5%.
And that's based upon the portfolio
as of 9/30.
So and that will change.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks. That's it. That's all for me.
Our next question comes from David Miyazaki from Confluence. Please go ahead, David.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Since everyone else has asked a question about Montrose, I need to join that crowd. But, you know, it is pretty interesting, right, that you could create a situation. As you describe it, it seems as though they will either pay a rising interest rate to you, or they will pay a significant make-whole premium, and either way, that it's a pretty good position for yourselves. Is that a correct characterization?
It's correct. I think you think about it as we got a nice I don't want to call it make-whole, but a prepayment built in through the discount up front. So if they pay us off in the very short term, we lent at 98, we're getting back par. And we've had a double-digit coupon along the way. And then if in the very, very near term, the first year or so, we get a big make-whole or prepayment penalty starting out at 105, that comes down and converges to an inflection point where they could prepay us at par basically for a day. And then after that day, you have increasing rate up back up, and that's about 2 years out.
Okay, so my recollection, Rocco, was that you guys were the lead on this one. Is that correct?
Yes.
That you guys structured this so that in such a way that was so favorable?
Yes.
Okay, so I guess a couple of questions there. I mean, if I were the senior lenders, I don't know if I'd be thrilled to see this much interest going out underneath of me. So do they have blocking privileges because they're a senior?
No, they do not.
Okay, so this is, you know, as you describe it, it's a good situation to be in. One of the things that we've heard about is because there's so much private equity capital that is out there, that at the margin on the subordinated debt exposures, that some private equity sponsors are beginning to move into the subordinated debt position because the returns are, you know, attractive enough, and there's so much excess private equity capital. Was that, did you run across that in this situation, or have you seen it elsewhere?
Well, we did not in this situation, and this comes back to our strategic relationship with Stifel, because this company was banked by them. We got in early, you know, discussions I've had over 20 years with companies like this. This structure I've been fortunate enough to use maybe less than a half a dozen times, but it's not the first time I've done it. And as a private company, you really don't want to bring a private equity sponsor in as a debt investor, because you're really starting to open the door to the sponsor coming after you to take over in not necessarily a friendly way. So we actually had the pole position, knowing that they didn't want to go there.
Okay, great. That's good to hear, and it's also good to hear that the Stifel relationship that was kind of at the bedrock of your formation is really come through some good deal flow. I wanted to shift also over
David,
to your energy
one last
side.
Thing before you leave,
sure,
that
sure.
This is Chris. When Mike said it was a short time frame, our guys spent better part of 2 months on this deal. So it wasn't a week or two. It was highly structured and negotiated. So just didn't want to let that sit unsaid.
No, that's a good point. I think, you know, short is always, you know, something that is open to interpretation, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Shifting over to your energy side, you know, it had been, my recollection is that it, at one point it was almost a third of your book. And, you know, some of that exposure has not been helpful throughout the cycle. So as you think about going back in here, and, you know, I think, Mike, you mentioned that there's some cash flow leverage as the environment gets better. Well, in that it can drop through to the bottom line, presumably because there's fixed costs. But doesn't that also mean on the other side that when the tide goes out, that it disproportionately affects the bottom line as well?
You're absolutely correct, and I'm glad you bring that up. So that's why there's two things that in the new investment, why we liked it. The two things are a sponsor that, you know, we here know personally very, very well, long history with them. But number two, forget about that, okay? Anybody who, you know, generically says, well, we haven't been through a cycle since 08, if you talk about energy, we've been through a cycle. So we've had stress tests. We've seen what's happened to asset values. And when we stress the asset values here, we are still more than one turn covered on our debt. And that is part of why we sit there and say, don't get too comfortable with $55, $60 oil, because it can easily revert back to 40. I don't think it'll revert to 27, but it can easily revert to 40. And how are we feeling then? And then you have less cash flow. You got more leverage, but we've got very, very good asset coverage on this investment.
Okay. I mean, it does create, you know, optically from the investment side looking in, you know, to have yourself, I think at 19 or in that range is probably among the highest that's out there. And, you know, it would seem that perception could translate into higher cost of equity capital in that your valuation may remain lower. So do you make that sort of calculus when you think about how much industry concentration you have with regard to energy?
We do, and part of that calculus is that we would not expect it to stay that high. And earlier I talked to liquidity that we see in that portfolio of that 20%, at least 5% and closer to 10% of it being liquid.
Okay. I would think right now in all the areas that you could be lending in, that energy is probably one that lenders actually have some strength relative to borrowers. But, you know, at the same time, I think it would be concerning for us as investors to see the proportion go back up to, you know, say the 30% number. And so that's not your intention. You'd be looking to go more in the opposite direction from here.
The opposite direction.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for answering my questions.
And gentlemen, at this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking with you next quarter.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for attending.